Hi, my name's Emily Maxwell. I am 33 years old and I just finished my rookie Iditarod in 33rd position.
Born and raised in the Midwestern college town of Iowa City, Iowa, Emily Maxwell is still pretty new to mushing and to Alaska. For some people, running the Iditarod is a lifelong quest, but Emily says she kind of stumbled into it.
So the summer of 2015, my brother and I came up to Alaska for just a vacation, and we're here for 10 days. And everywhere we went, I just pretty much immediately felt very at home here. And I was already thinking, like, how can I move here? And what could I do if I came up here? And on the second to last day, we stopped in Girdwood on our way back up to Anchorage.
Emily and her brother wound up at a bar in Girdwood, a place with beer on tap and pool tables, and a man who was definitely trying to catch her eye.
At the time, I really wasn't interested in meeting anyone, and so I kind of avoided his every look, and then I put quarters up to play pool, and then of course we got matched to play, and so we started talking, and here I am now.
The man was Nicolas Petit, a French-born musher who lived in Girdwood. Nick had been running the Iditarod for the past 5 years. That year, 2015, he'd finished in 10th place. They hit it off. Emily returned to Iowa as planned, but she and Nick stayed in touch. And at the beginning of 2016, she moved up to join him in Girdwood. She would help him with his dogs, but Emily didn't see herself mushing, at least not at first. And she certainly didn't think she'd be running the premier 1,000-mile race across Alaska just a couple years after first stepping foot on a dog sled.
I thought, well, I'll try it just because it's what he does. But yeah, I had basically no desire really to be a musher other than, you know, I would run his dogs behind him.
So what was your first race?
My first race actually was with Nick on Denali Doubles, and it was no more than like 2 or 3 weeks after I moved up. And so it's hosted by Jeff King up on the Denali Highway, and I think it was about a 230-mile course, and it's just an out and back. But it's cool with this race, you have two mushers, hence the doubles name. So two sleds, like a tag sled. And then we had 20 dogs, which is a lot. And the first musher, basically, you just have to have at least one person that really, really knows what they're doing. And the other person can't have done Iditarod or the Quest. So it's actually a really neat way for, say, new mushers to go with somebody more experienced on a race so that you're not just like thrown to the wolves. It's a really great way to learn, you know, getting into a checkpoint, feeding the dogs, knowing where hot water is, knowing where your sleeping quarters are, knowing, you know, just understanding how races kind of operate. So we ran from, there's the parking lot and there's like a big sign, like, don't go beyond this point from, you know, October to May. You know, you can go out on like snow machine or with the dog team. So we left from that parking lot.
So you start behind the sign that says, "Don't go beyond this point."
Yeah. It's like basically you're about to die if you go beyond this point. We actually we got second place by like literally a nose. Pete Kaiser and his friend. We were in first place until, gosh, like the last, it felt like 2 feet. They were like really, really gaining on us right at the last minute. Like we crossed the finish line basically side by side. But they had, you know, like two noses in front of us. So, but it was really fun. It was really exciting. And I definitely, my interest kind of grew from there.
When did you start thinking about the Iditarod for yourself?
Oh, gosh. You know, honestly, I think kind of right before sign-up day, which is in June, because I did my qualifiers last year. I signed up for the Kinnick 200 and finished that. And that was my first qualifier. And I got 10th place, actually, which was pretty cool. And I think even at that point, we weren't saying, like, oh, I should get qualified so I can go sign up. It was just like, oh, well, I did that. Like, and I think I was signed up for Copper Basin, which was the next weekend, which was a doozy. That race definitely is, that's a hard one. And did that. And then the Willow 300 was in its first year last year. And we both signed up for that. And then it was like, well, kind of by accident, I guess I was qualified. You know, we just kind of kept going. Yeah, I feel like it was no more than like, oh, I might as well, you know, right around sign up day. It's like, I think we can swing the dogs. I think we can swing the gear. And I guess I'll do it.
Now that you're on the other side of the Iditarod, what were you expecting it to be like, and was it what you imagined, or?
I don't know what I was expecting. I know I was incredibly anxious beforehand. I mean, the week or so before, I mean, I had every nightmare you can possibly have about, like, crazy things that were going to happen on the trail. Or I dreamt that we had to, like, run through a concert, like a huge concert crowd. And I was like, God, this doesn't seem like a great idea. Why are we having to do this? And then you wake up, like, in this cold sweat. But, you know, I kept telling myself, okay, once you get away from the starting line, it's like, it's always the same thing. You're just running your dogs, which I'm like, I know how to do. The dogs know how to run. It'll be fine. It's just going to be a lot longer than what we have done. And honestly, once we got out there and the whole rest of the race, it went so much better than I thought it would, just in terms of, I feel like we just meshed really well, the dogs and I. Like, I really kept myself positive. And then if you can keep yourself positive, it helps them to stay positive. And it's just a cycle that back and forth, I felt like we were all pretty happy the whole time. And then, I mean, as far as the trail, I don't think we were all expecting quite as much snow as we got. It just, you know, turned out to be a really slow run times. You know, you expect like a 40-mile run to be anywhere like 4 to 6 hours, depending on the trail. And it was like, you know, you're out there for like sometimes 8 hours or more, you know, just because it's deep snow. And spots like the gorge and the steps, I was terrified of. Basically got to Squintna, rested 4 hours, and then from there, pretty much ran all the way through the steps just because I wanted them to be a little bit tired by the time we got there so they wouldn't be blasting down them. And those, they went fine. Like, I didn't tip at all. Of course, there's a camera guy waiting at the bottom to watch you tip over. And I was like, oh, God, here we go. And we got through and, you know, I was like, phew. And then the gorge was actually, it was kind of fun, which I was expecting that I was going to have to be medevaced out of the trail afterwards. But, you know, we had a good time. We tipped once and, you know, recovered fine. And I will say by the time I got to the bottom, I was like soaked in sweat just from like the concentration.
I asked Emily if running the Iditarod had changed how she sees mushing and mushers. Does the sport look different to her now?
It does, yeah. I mean, going into the Iditarod, it's like, intellectually, you're like, okay, it's 1,000 miles. You know it's a long race, but you don't realize just how long it is until you're like, on the third or fourth day, and it's like, God, you still have like 700 miles to go, you know? And I mean, at one point I started doing the math with run and rest and how slow the trail was. I'm like, are we even going to make it there for the banquet? I'm not sure. But yeah, it definitely, I mean, I think after this, I feel like I could do anything with mushing. And I learned so much on this race, just whether it was from other mushers and kind of watching them with their dogs or talking to them at the checkpoints about how they do certain things, or just, you know, by me being out on the trail and what I learned about, I mean, I think I'm so much like a better sled driver now. I think I've learned a lot about dog care at this point. And also, I mean, by, you know, the fifth or sixth day, like I just felt so zeroed in on those dogs. It's like being a parent, I think, you know, if your kid's got a toothache, you like, you know it. And I was so on them that the second that anything was weird, I was aware and could take care of it. And yeah, so I think it's definitely changed my perspective on the sport and also on other mushers. I'm like, God, I've been hanging out with a lot of these people that have done Iditarod Forever for the last 2 years. I've known them. I'm like, man, you guys are tough. You know, like, I can't believe some of the stuff that you go through on this race. I mean, Jim Lanier has done it how many times, and he's almost 80, and it's just like incredible that anybody can do it, you know.
Did you have any trail buddies out there?
Yeah, actually, Jim and Scott Jansen, we ran together for quite a while, and he helped get me through this whiteout storm that we had in between Ophir and Iditarod, because I was terrified. It was like, I mean, I could hardly see my leaders because the snow was just like so thick and flying sideways. The trail markers were hard to see, and there was no trail because it was all blown in. So I basically just like watched his headlamp and just let the dogs follow him. And I mean, I stayed right on him. So yeah, Scott and Jim, spent quite a bit of time with him. Alan Moore, early in the race, it was around him. So it was nice to be around people that have done the race multiple times and, you know, able to ask them questions and kind of watch how they do things. And that, yeah, that really helped me a lot.
Emily says one of the hardest things about the race was the lack of sleep.
Before this, I had only done a 300-mile race, was my longest one. And I'd heard mushers that had done Iditarod before say that they're actually more well-rested on the Iditarod just because it is so long. You give your dogs more breaks and you get more breaks. And I had also heard people say that, like, after the fourth or fifth day, the sleep deprivation actually gets easier, which I was like, I don't know how that's possible. But I did kind of feel that, like, days kind of four through six, I felt like I was hitting this peak where I hadn't gotten that much sleep, but I felt really good and really positive and really happy. And the dogs were doing great. And after about that many days and kind of maybe seven through the finish, it was sort of slowly going downhill. Cause you know, even if you're getting like 2 hours of sleep at each checkpoint, after 8 or 9 days of 2 hours of sleep every 24 hours or so, it's like, you're definitely becoming diminished, you know, in terms of like your just basic decision making. And so you always have to remind yourself, like, okay, you're tired. And it, that can also affect your mood. When I got into Unalakleet, I had to drop 3 dogs at the previous checkpoint. So I was down to 9 or 10, I think, at that point, and was feeling kind of nervous about that. And then that run was a little bit hard, and they were getting a little bit squirrely for a minute, and that kind of made me nervous. And then they kind of feed off, I think, your nervousness. They pick up on that. So it just kind of becomes a cycle, and you're trying to, like, stay positive and just be like, everything's fine. So, but when I got into Unalakleet, that was definitely a low point. And I was really tired. And when I got in, actually, I had a bunch of mushergrams that had just come, and it was the perfect moment because it, you know, mushergrams are messages that friends and family can send to you on the trail. So they'll call into a call center and the people write the messages out and then they get delivered to you. And it was like, oh my gosh, this, like, I needed this so bad. And I carried them actually in my sled the rest of the time because I thought, okay, if you get into that low point, you're going to grab these. And, you know, you have all these people saying, like, we're watching you and you're doing so great. And it just, it was such a good boost. And I got, you know, like 4 hours of sleep there. I think we stayed like 8 hours. So
a luxurious 4 hours of sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, they have like little individual bedrooms actually and like real beds. So it was like a good 4 hours. I felt amazing after that.
Did you have a personal favorite moment or a point on the race?
There were a few. There were a lot actually. But I think leaving White Mountain, I was a little bit nervous about it just because you hear stories about, I mean, you're what, 900 and some miles into the race, and that dog teams have quit on people before. And as recently as the last 2 years, you know, that's happened. And so I was really hoping, like, I hope you guys still like me enough that you're just going to get up and we're going to leave this checkpoint and go on our last run. And we had, you know, our 8 hour mandatory rest there. And when I was getting ready to leave, you know, they were still, it was kind of sunny out that day. And so they were really like enjoying just rolling in the sun and relaxing. And Lev Schwartz came over to me to talk to me like just maybe 2 minutes before my departure time. And they were all lying down. I was like, okay, I hope you guys are going to get up. And I had my parka over my handlebar and I picked it up and I put it on and Lev's standing there. And as soon as I put that parka on, every dog stood up like ready to go. And Lev looks at me, he's like, damn, you did a good job with these guys. And then that run going out into the Topcock Hills and like the sun was just setting and it's just so incredible. It's hard to explain some of those places out there. And even if I had taken pictures, it's just like, you can't imagine. It was such a gorgeous run and those hills are huge. They're not super steep, but they're just kind of long. And the dogs, I was expecting to have to like really help them and be running up every hill. And they pretty much blasted right up every single one, you know, and I'd talk them up a little bit like, good dogs. All right. Good job. All right there. But they just went right up like it was no problem at all. And I at that point, I was pretty sure we were going to have a really nice last run. And we did. So that was a pretty special moment.
And your last run, it was kind of an overnight thing, right? You got in early morning.
Yeah. Yeah. We left, you know, shortly before sunset and ran through the night, which I kind of, you know, it's not necessarily ideal for the people that are waiting for you at the finish line that you get in at like 4 or 5 in the morning. But I knew that the dogs would have a really nice run if we went overnight. Just it's cooler and, you know, nighttime, I think it's easier for you to focus on them because you're not looking around as much and it's easier for them to focus on just like moving down the trail too. Yeah. Yeah. That last run went really well.
Running the Iditarod is far from the only challenge Emily has faced in her life. A big difference, she says, is that this is a challenge she chose. But the lesson is the same.
Overall, it's like I do know that. And I think this is true for a lot of people. And I wish that everybody could realize, like, you're tougher than you think. And you can get through more than you think you can, you know. And you don't know that until you're in it. You know, I think you just, you don't know until it's happening. And when it's happening, you just keep putting one foot in front of the other. It's the same thing with this race. I really, you know, anytime I started to feel like, gosh, like how long have we been out here and I'm tired and I'm cold or this or that. And it's like, I would just like focus on the dogs and thought every step they take, that's one less step that we have to take to get to know them.
Thanks to my fellow Iowa Cityan, Emily Maxwell. Music by Poddington Bear. In Nome, I'm Zoe Gruskin.